plentiful.
The Joker's henchmen grinned, rotating their wrists.
You decide to get in our way?
Selina said softly to those assembled as she prowled for the man seated nearest to them at the ornately carved oak bar.
You try to screw us over, and the punishments will be...
The man trembled on his red velvet stool as she gently ran a claw down his stubbly cheek, then the other. She rumbled a soft laugh.
Plentiful.
She turned, nodding to Harley and Ivy.
Bitch.
Someone spat from the back. Selina rolled her eyes. Yet, she knew that voice. Selina halted. The room was silent as a tomb. Her mask identified the speaker, though she didn't need the intel. An aging, overweight Italian man seated at a table near the dartboard. Carmine Falcone. Precisely who she'd come to see. He still looked the same, still wore his too tight tailored suits, still had that slicked back hair and sneer permanently on his pale face, the burst capillaries all over his hawkish nose. She wondered if the leopard still answered to him, if Mika had broken free yet. Selina stalked toward him. Ivy murmured,
"You've done it now, asshole."
To his credit, Falcone didn't flinch. He only smirked at her and took a swig from his beer. No one had ever made him tremble. No one had ever defied him. There was a first time for everything, Selina supposed. She thumbed free her bullwhip and let it sing. One crack had Falcone's beer shattered in his hand. The second had the whip wrapped around his neck and him hauled over the table, thrashing like a lassoed pig. Four of his men leapt to their feet from nearby tables, guns out, only to find Ivy and Harley with their own personal arsenals already aimed at them, the Joker's henchmen flanking the women, eager for the fight. In Ivy's hand, a blood-red flower glowed in the golden lights of the bar.
"I made a new model after the bank heist," Ivy had said when she showed Selina earlier.
Flowers that were capable of taking out many men, not just the one closest. But Ivy hadn't stopped there. Around her other hand, that vine, its tip now equipped with slashing thorns. The man closest to Ivy was cringing at the swirling plant around her wrist. The crony before Harley had blanched at the small metal ball in her hand, painted like a child's toy. Selina tightened her grip on the bullwhip as she stalked closer, Falcone trying and failing to free it from around his bulging neck. Selina swiped her claws down his back, opening up his suit and the checkered shirt beneath. A hairy, sweaty slab of flesh greeted her.
"The East End is mine," she said quietly.
It always had been. And despite the whip around his neck, Falcone screamed as she ran one claw down the column of his spine, skin splitting, blood gushing. With a flick of her wrist, the bullwhip sprang free. Falcone was shuddering and groaning. Selina only said to him,
"Be grateful that wasn't your tongue."
Then she strode for the door, Harley and Ivy backing out with little smirks, weapons still trained on Falcone and his men.
"Tell them good night, Ivy," Selina said, strutting out the bar door, the Joker's three henchmen following her like well-trained dogs.
Ivy chuckled, soft and sweet.
"Good night."
A petal-soft thump on the floor, a hissing noise beginning, and then shouts and roars. By the time Harley and Ivy were swaggering out into the night to meet Selina, the bar had fallen silent. They'd all have one hell of a headache when they woke up and realized that she hadn't called GCPD on them while they were knocked unconscious. She only wished she could see Falcone's face when he regained consciousness, when he understood his reign was at an end, especially after that humiliation. Harley half skipped down the cracked sidewalk ahead. Ivy linked arms with Selina.
"What happens next?"
Selina gazed toward the northern horizon.
"They kneel."
Gordon held his officers at bay long enough for Luke to study the site of the prison break at Blackgate for an hour, his suit's tech analyzing everything from the gas Poison Ivy had used to bring down the guards to the explosives Harley had set in the concrete walls, all orchestrated by Catwoman. Out of hand. Completely out of hand. Within the prison, the inmates were rattling the bars, taunting him as he passed by on his way out, Gordon in tow. Some spat on Gordon, but the man ignored it.
"They've gotten away with everything so far," Gordon said tightly. "Now they're just trying to see what the limit is."
Luke knew it, but Catwoman had warned him that worse was coming to Gotham City. Her words still lingered.
"If she's bold enough to do this, then it might be an indication she'll go after Arkham itself." "No one is that dumb." "She's working with Harley. She freed three of the Joker's cronies tonight. She might very well be preparing to free the Joker, either as a gift to Harley or to curry favor from the man himself."
Luke's blood chilled at the thought. Gordon shook his head and opened the sealed door to let them out into the prison's main waiting area. Cops filled the space, all sizing up Luke as he passed. As Batwing passed, his armor like blue lightning in the fluorescence overhead.
"We can't let that happen," Gordon said,
pausing at the doors to the prison. Far beyond, out by the border fences, cameras flashed and reporters jockeyed for the best angle to catch his exit. Luke pushed a button on his suit, prepping his wings for flight. Soaring up and out was his best way to escape the reporters and their questions.
"I've got it handled," Luke said, shouldering his way through the heavy front doors. "Trust me."
Gordon didn't look convinced, but he nodded. Luke took three running steps into the night before flaring his wings and launching skyward. He'd handle it all right.
"I need you to host a gala," Luke said to his dad the next morning,
bracing his hands on his father's desk.
"Please."
Lucius Fox raised an eyebrow as he set aside the document he'd been reading.
"Do I even want to know?"
Luke ran his hands over his head.
"It's a huge favor, I know. I promise you, that no one will get hurt. But I need you to hold a gala in 3 nights. To raise money for the circus, the zoo, the jail, the public targets that have suffered from Catwoman and her criminal friends. I assume we will also be displaying an expensive object to be auctioned off for charity?" "Exactly."
Luke slid a pile of papers toward his father.
"Ask Mom to invite all the people on this list."
It was a mirror of the guest lists of every gala he'd attended where Catwoman had appeared. His father idly scanned it.
"Your mother worries enough about your readjustment to civilian life that she'll be thrilled, regardless of the inconvenient time frame. If anyone can put together a party in 3 days, it's Mom. She is indeed a wonder."
For not the first time, Luke wished she knew about Batwing, about Bruce, about all of it. Luke crossed his arms, pacing through his father's plush office.
"She's really gotten under your skin, hasn't she?"
Luke knew his father didn't mean his mother. He gave his father a long look.
"She's taken it too far.
Way too far."
"Be careful, Luke. Making yourself the bait?"
His dad sighed.
"Just be careful."
Luke had no intention of doing so, but he nodded nonetheless. Chapter 21. The Fox estate had been transformed into a twinkling garden, the halls and ballroom bedecked in bursting white flowers and candles, slender birch trees filling the corners, and cream silk streamers draping across the domed ceiling. It was the prettiest place Selina had ever seen. The Venetian palaces hadn't compared to this. Not even Talia's luxurious personal quarters held a flame. It wasn't just the signs of wealth. It was the sense of home, even in the ballroom, that radiated from each inch of it. Each room full of places where she'd love to spend an afternoon curled up, tasteful, elegant, and welcoming. A band played at one end of the giant domed space, the dance floor already full. Far more than usual, but the band was better than usual, too. But even better, The diamond and sapphire necklace displayed in a glass case on the opposite side of the long, rectangular ballroom from where the band played. She'd barely looked for Luke, even if it was his house. She'd spotted him by an archway, greeting almost every guest when she arrived. All of them had seemed grateful for the security at both of the gates along the drive, stationed at every door. Selena had seen it as a challenge. $15 million. That's how much the fox necklace was worth. Taking it when there was so much security? An added bonus. Clad in a long-sleeved red dress, Selena had quickly surveyed the initial details of the ballroom, bypassed Luke, and greeted his mother instead. She could barely bring herself to look too long at the kind, glowing woman who had welcomed her into this house, the woman who she'd be stealing from. At the tall, handsome man at her side, the spitting image of Luke in a few decades, who greeted each guest as if they were a close friend. So the hellos had been quick, before Luke could finish greeting the guest before him and turn their way, and Selena had headed into the crowd, letting the swish in her hips do the talking for her. They hadn't seen or spoken to each other since that night, though he'd knocked on her door twice. She hadn't felt like answering. In the past 2 hours, she'd felt him watching her, though. As she danced with countless men, as she drank and ate with the various ruling ladies of Gotham City. And now, as she danced with an aging business titan, a coy, bland smile on her face, she felt Luke stare from across the room. He was in the middle of a conversation with a truly ancient old man. Good. The old man seemed to be talking his ear off, and though Luke seemed to be truly listening, Selena ignored the glance Luke cast her way. Perhaps she was being unfair, perhaps a bit sensitive, but she could still hear his cold words about how he didn't care what she did. She didn't care if he apologized or not. It had been her mistake to hope for a different reaction. The song rolled to a close, and Selena stepped out of her current partner's embrace, offering a smile to the old man. Before she'd made it a step, a deep voice said from behind her,
"Mind if I cut in?"
The old man only gave a charming bow before backing away. Selena stared up at Luke. He stared back at her.
"Hello,"
he said, his voice a bit hoarse. He was in his Marine's uniform, dashing as ever. Causing a scene by walking away would only draw attention to her presence. With the necklace in the balance, her best chance of remaining undetected lay in being seen here, but not really noted. "Hello," Selena said, offering up a hand for him to take. Luke kept silent, sliding a hand around her waist as he took her hand and led her into the next song. Selena cringed a bit as a sweet, old jazz melody filled the ballroom. Not this song. Anything but this song. It wasn't the song from Carousel, but how many times had she heard Maggie play this, singing along as best she could? How many times had she slow danced with her sister in their kitchen to this song? Her body turned distant, the dress stifling, every beat and note a stab to the gut. She could barely look at Luke, at anyone. Fighting the pain rising in her chest, Selena fixed her gaze on a spot over his shoulder. Luke made it through the first verse and chorus before he asked,
"Not a fan of jazz?"
The question pulled her out of the fog of memory long enough to look at him. It was another life ago, another world, and this new world she inhabited? "I love jazz, actually." It was the truth.
"Then why the grimace?"
She could never explain, not really.
They loved this song.
She shook her head. Old memories. It was as much truth as she could offer. Luke swallowed.
"I'm sorry for how shitty I acted the other night."
Selena stiffened. "It's fine." Luke frowned.
"It's not. I'm never at my best after a fight. And with the pain and exhaustion, and when you mentioned your date."
"Oh, so it's my fault you snapped at me?" An older couple whipped their heads toward them. Luke led her a little farther away, voice low as he said tightly,
"I didn't say that."
"Yes, you did." Her jaw clenched as she looked away, searching for an escape route off this dance floor that wouldn't raise any eyebrows. He cleared his throat.
I reacted badly. That's what I'm trying to say.
What do you even care?
The words were cold, flat, not at all the lilting drawl she wielded with Holly.
I thought we were friends, he said carefully.
Again, she looked at him, no light or amusement in her voice.
I don't have friends.
A muscle flickered in his jaw.
Well, I'm trying to change that.
Selena said nothing. He went on,
and I'm trying to apologize to you.
She only watched the band behind him, her face a mask of calm cold.
Holly, Luke said.
She hated that name, was growing sick of that name. He loosed a breath.
I'm sorry. I mean it.
He sounded sincere. Slowly, Selena met his earnest brown eyes. She didn't bother to keep her wariness from her stare. Wariness and exhaustion.
Holly. He thought he was dancing with Holly.
It didn't matter. Not when she had so much to do to bring this city to its knees. Not with the weight of her mission pressing on her. It had been pressing on her for longer than she could remember. Luke said, his voice rough,
Some days, I feel like I'm still back there, overseas. Most nights, my body and mind can't tell the difference. And most days, I feel half here.
He swallowed, as if unsure where he was going with this.
I'm still learning how to return to being normal again, if such a thing exists.
Selena let his words sink in, his honesty. She scanned his handsome face.
Being normal is a trap.
He blinked. Selena whispered as the song came to a close,
Don't let it cage you.
The last of the guests had been taken home by their drivers 2 hours ago. His parents had headed to bed 30 minutes after that, and Luke had feigned exhaustion as well. But as the clock struck 2, he remained cloaked in the shadows of the ballroom, the light on his suit dimmed as he watched the necklace across the room glint in the moonlight streaming in through the wall of glass doors leading onto the veranda. He'd been waiting for over an hour now, had listened as the estate workers turned off the lights and either left or found their own rooms in the sprawling house. She hadn't come during the party, a small disappointment. Perhaps she deemed the added security not as a challenge, but as suicide. Luke had sent them packing. He didn't want her to see the whole thing for what it was, a trap. 2:10. 2:15. Then, Luke kept as still as one of the statues flanking him as she appeared. She slipped through the glass doors from the veranda without a sound. She'd disabled the house's alarm system then. Interesting. Catwoman moved across the parquet floors, little more than a shadow herself. Every movement fluid and graceful, calculated and controlled. She halted before the glass case on the pedestal, studied the necklace glinting within. Her claws slid free. Luke's muscles tensed, every instinct telling him to spring. Yet he still watched as she scratched a claw in a circle around the glass, as she held out her awaiting palm right beneath, catching the disc before it could shatter on the floor. Expert, swift work. No sign of Harley or Ivy. The slate veranda beyond the glass doors was empty, save for a few potted boxwoods, the manicured lawn glistening with dew in the moonlight. Perhaps she didn't want her friends getting a cut of tonight's prize. Catwoman again scanned the ballroom, as if listening for something. But Luke kept pressed into the shadows, the pillar in front of him hiding any sign of his body, his armor. She returned her attention to the case, the necklace within. Her hand slid into the circle she'd opened up, claws glinting as she reached for the jewels. Luke sucked in a breath. He had the evidence he needed, recorded on his suit's camera, proof of intent. His knees bent, ready to lunge. The attack happened so fast it took Luke a heartbeat to realize what was going on. Not from him. The attack didn't come from him. A slim female figure, clad in loose black clothes, pounced from the shadows, from above, from the windows lining the wall right below the domed ceiling. And as the woman landed on silent feet, sending Catwoman leaping back, slamming into the stone base of the case as she went, Luke got one look at the tan-skinned woman's face, half hidden beneath a black hood and scarf over her mouth, and knew who she was. Tigress, one of the most notorious and deadly members of the League of Assassins. Chapter 22. A League member, a powerful one, had arrived in Gotham City. Luke had read Bruce's file on Tigress, on all the known assassins for the League. The woman had killed her way across the world, and those kills were often ugly. The perfect representative of the League itself, the organization that was larger, wealthier, and far more dangerous than any of the criminals in Gotham City. Mercifully, the League had yet to try to expand into this city. Luke's blood iced over at the thought of Tigress being just the start. Catwoman rolled, claws gouging deep lines in the wood floors to steady herself as she jumped to her feet. They stared at each other for a long moment. In her black hood, only Tigress's eyes were visible. "Far bigger players are coming to Gotham," Catwoman had said. She'd warned him. Worse things than the Joker and his cohorts. Worse things like the League of Assassins. And if the League had set its sights on Gotham City after all these years, his parents were in this house, sleeping upstairs. Luke had a heartbeat to decide, to warn them to get to their panic room, or to join the fight to stop Catwoman and Tigress. Catwoman moved before he could pick. She charged right at Tigress. The assassin braced her feet apart. Catwoman feinted left, then bolted right, right through the open door from the veranda, avoiding the crash of glass that might send his parents or employees investigating. Catwoman made it 20 feet onto the slate tiles of the veranda before Tigress was after her. Luke sprinted outside and halted dead in his tracks as the assassin launched herself upon Catwoman. It should have been over immediately, but Catwoman did not go down. They fought in a black whirlwind, no weapons, just fists and feet and limbs. Neither went for the weapons on them, even Catwoman's bullwhip hung untouched at her hip. Fast, so damn fast he could barely track them. Catwoman, even on the defensive, she held her own. Where Tigress would have knocked her feet from under her, Catwoman nimbly dodged the blow. Where Tigress would have slammed her fist into Catwoman's helmeted face, the punch was blocked. Strike, move, block, over and over. Luke had no words for it. He'd never seen anyone fight like that. When Tigress landed a brutal blow to the ribs, she took it, didn't stumble, kept moving, and the punches that Catwoman threw were deadly, like Tigress's, but he'd seen that style before. Whatever training Catwoman had gone through, boxing had been a part of it, and no small amount of gymnastics from the ease with which she bent and moved. She danced on her feet, weaving beautifully. She'd taken whatever she'd learned in the ring and modified it, amplified it. Luke stopped naming the techniques and maneuvers after he recognized six of them. After Catwoman began to push back, again and again, punch, jab, duck, kick, they held nothing back. And as Catwoman took the offensive, while Tigress was forced to yield step after step, he knew who was going to win. Tigress fought beautifully, like a blade made flesh. But Catwoman fought like she meant it, as if her fear of losing wasn't death, but something else, something that fueled her, focused her. Luke saw it coming, the blow that would end it. Tigress threw a punch, the strength behind it enough to shatter someone's ribs, its form utter perfection. Catwoman let her think the blow was going to land, and as it neared her stomach, she whirled. One hand locked onto Tigress's exposed arm, the other went around her back. With a grunt that even Luke heard, she flipped the assassin right over her shoulder, slammed Tigress onto the three steps leading down from the veranda. Stone cracked. Bone crunched. Tigress lay there for a heartbeat, stunned. Or broken, Luke didn't know. Catwoman was on her instantly, and this time, a blade came out. She'd pulled a short sword from a hidden sheath down her back. He hadn't even known one was built into her suit. The blade glinted brightly in the moonlight as she lifted it. Time to move. Luke fired a steel bolt from his suit's arm, and as that blade came down, his bolt met the center of her sword. Catwoman cried out in surprise as her blade went flying into the grass. She whirled toward him, the lenses of her helmet seeming to glow with irritation. Luke approached, realizing that Tigress wasn't moving because Catwoman had broken her spine, and said, "Don't." Catwoman remained where she was. "This doesn't involve you." Luke pointed his next bolt toward Catwoman's face.
"She might have valuable information."
"I'm sure she does," Catwoman said. "But it doesn't matter to me.
You'll kill her for stepping on your territory?"
Tigress let out a low laugh.
"You're dead,"
she said in a thick accent. Catwoman turned back to the assassin, head angling in that way he knew meant trouble. But faster than either Luke or Catwoman could move, Tigress brought her hand up to her mouth, grimacing in pain at the movement, and poison. Catwoman lunged as if she'd ripped the capsule from Tigress's mouth. The assassin's chest rose and fell rapidly.
"You're a dead woman walking after what you stole."
She laughed at Catwoman. Then, nothing. Her eyes went still, unseeing. For a long moment, Catwoman stared at Tigress's body. She was a body now, a corpse.
"Shit,"
she breathed.
"You were about to kill her anyway,"
Luke said coldly, his helmet deepening his voice. Catwoman stood, pushing off Tigress's broken, limp body, and retrieved her sword from the grass. A smooth motion had the blade again sheathed and hidden down the back of her suit.
"I was going to give her an injury that would keep her out of my way for a while. The broken spine wasn't enough."
He could have sworn she winced.
"That was a mistake."
He couldn't quite process it. There was a corpse between them as Luke remained atop the steps, Catwoman in the grass. Catwoman at his parents' house, his childhood home, on the lawn where he and his parents had played soccer, where his mom had pitched him baseballs, where they'd had picnics and parties, where he'd gone sledding down to the pond. She did not belong here, in this place, with his parents sleeping only a floor up. His parents. If his mom found a body on the estate grounds, if she even heard about it, she'd demand answers. Ones he wanted to keep her far, far away from. And it would be such a profoundly shitty way to repay them for their help tonight. Not that Catwoman knew. Not that she had any idea that the man standing before her was the same billionaire's son she'd stolen from twice now and had tried to rob a third time. Luke said,
"We need to move the body off the grounds for the cops to find."
"No handcuffs for me?"
A sly, husky question.
"She attacked you and then killed herself. But if you want to go to jail, sure."
Silence.
"Consider this a favor. I don't arrest you, and you help me get this body off the grounds."
"Why?"
He pointed to the house.
"Because the Fox family is one of the few decent ones in this city, and I'm not going to risk the League sniffing around here for information about their prized killer."
The thought of the League coming here, grabbing his parents, was enough to make him nauseated.
"So noble,"
she snorted, but moved to Tigress's booted feet, picked them up.
"Well?"
Luke grimaced beneath his mask, debating. Drained from her fight and with her hands occupied, she'd be an easy target, and he had all the evidence he needed to bring her in. And yet, she had kept the fight silent, had moved it outside, perhaps to keep the risks, the casualties contained,
and whether that was because she also knew that his parents were good people, Luke appreciated it. He stepped up to Tigress's head and slid his gloved hands under her shoulders.
There are some woods by the road, just beyond the property border.
Luke realized within seconds that while Tigress appeared slender, beneath the loose black clothes, her body was packed with dense muscle, heavy muscle. He and Catwoman didn't speak as they hauled Tigress's corpse between them, across the lawn, past the formal gardens, through the dense thickets, and finally over the property border and into the woods beyond. He could have navigated it blind, but made sure to stop every now and then as if assessing some mental map of his surroundings. And only when they were perhaps a quarter mile into the pines did Luke say to her,
"Here is good. The road isn't too far off."
To his surprise, Catwoman laid the assassin's feet down gently. He blew out a breath as he did so as well, the sound gobbled up by the cool night winds dancing in the trees around them, making the pines sway as if they were drunkenly dancing. She stared at the assassin, long enough that Luke opened up a panel in his suit's arm to send a covert call to GCPD. He punched in the first two numbers, and then soft, whispered Arabic filled the space between them. At first, he thought Tigress was still alive, but then he realized the lilting, beautiful words, they were coming from her, Catwoman. Her Arabic was almost perfect. He hadn't heard it spoken so well since he'd returned. There was a slight American accent, the same as his own when he spoke it. He said nothing, lowering his hand from the panel in his arm, terminating the call. She finished, kneeling to close Tigress's open eyes with her gloved fingers. When Catwoman rose, she stared at the woman's corpse for a long moment before she said,
"She trained me at the League."
Every thought eddied out of Luke's head. She'd been trained at the League, trained by Tigress herself, which meant Catwoman's head lifted, the moonlight illuminating the lenses over her eyes.
"I am a ghoul, as she is, was."
She flexed her gloved hands as if shaking the feel of the assassin from them.
"It's what League assassins call themselves. When our training is complete, our final task is to dig our own future graves and recite our own final prayers. We lie in them from dusk until dawn, and when we emerge from the earth afterward, we are ghouls, wraiths."
He didn't ask how many of them ever made it back to their gravesites to fill those holes in the ground. She wasn't just some skilled jewel thief, a trained killer from the League of Assassins.
"The prayer," she went on, more to herself than him. "It was her final rite, what is owed to any wraith."
"Yet you didn't want to kill her tonight."
Even though Tigress had come here to kill her for something she'd stolen. Silence. Luke demanded,
"If you're in the League, why are you working with Harley and Ivy?"
She studied him as if debating her answer.
"I left."
Luke took a moment to process those words.
"No one leaves the League.
I did."
Hence the assassin after her.
"Why?"
"Nyssa and Talia al Ghul have always striven to follow in their father's footsteps.
An eco-terrorist maniac, not like Poison Ivy's desire to save the planet, to coexist with plant and animal. No, the man wanted the earth wiped clean of all human life." Catwoman shrugged.
"I found I no longer fit in."
Hence the warning the other week that worse was coming, either as part of Nyssa and Talia's agenda, or to hunt the woman before him.
"So you left," he said,
a slight nod. He wanted to see her face, wanted to know who he was speaking to, who had fought like a black wind tonight, who had dared walk away from the League, dared defy it.
"And as for why I'm working with Ivy and Harley?"
A shrug.
"Since I am no longer a part of the League, I need money to establish myself in Gotham."
Luke blinked, jaw clenching.
"Right. That
She went on, I stole something valuable from Nyssa when I left.
Tigress's warning echoed in his head.
I've been weighing options for potential buyers, but until I sell it, I'm low on funds.
What about just getting a job?
She laughed quietly.
You're terribly naive to say that.
Luke stiffened, but instead of lunging for her, he lifted his forearm and finally dialed the GCPD. He gave a clipped explanation that a body had been found at this specific location, hung up, and growled at her,
Don't even think about running.
Because he was going to arrest her, right now. He hit a button on his suit, the tech powering up, readying for the chase. His bat cuffs clicked free from his utility belt. Another soft laugh.
Oh, I don't think so.
His suit detected two others beside her. Right as Harlequin clenched two of those small circus ball explosives, one in each hand, a gas mask covering her face, and Poison Ivy thumbed free one of the orchids from the vine snaking across her torso. Smoke rippled from it, not to take him down, but to cloud their escape.
Hi, handsome, Ivy drawled.
Harley grinned. Something sparkled at Catwoman's fingertips. The necklace. The fox necklace. When Tigress had slammed her into that case the second time, she must have swiped it, too fast for even him to see. The diamonds burned with blue fire in the moonlight. Thanks for this, Catwoman said, and took a step back. Luke said tightly,
I have it on good authority that necklace is a fake.
He'd had a replica made yesterday. Cubic zirconia and painted brass. Total worth? A few $100. Catwoman let out a low laugh, the sound echoed by twin rumbles, motorcycles, parked on the road a few feet away. She stepped back into the smoke.
Oh, I know.
Then vanished. Luke lunged through the smoke, dodging trees before he reached the quiet road. She sped off into the night on the back of Harley Quinn's motorcycle. Too fast for him to follow, even with the wings.
He should have grabbed her, should have handcuffed her to Tigress and waited until the cops came. Should have... He had no idea.
A League assassin with a conscience. Here to sell something that the League would kill for, and Gotham City's underworld would line up to buy. His stomach turned. But even as it did, Luke recalled the way she'd fought. That low laugh. That frank, cool openness with which she spoke to him, and the heat that rose through him, stretching his skin tight over his bones, an after effect of battle, of adrenaline. Even though he hadn't thrown a single punch, even if he'd stood there, gawking while she fought, beautiful, graceful, and utterly off limits. Trouble. He was in big, big trouble. Chapter 23. Selina had been on the run for a month and a half. She'd taken money from Nyssa, broken into the safe in her office, and swiped her bank card out of her wallet minutes before Selina had headed off on a mission for the League. She'd walked out of the compound right through the front doors. She didn't know how long it had taken them to figure out who had done it. Probably Talia herself had pieced it together. But by now, it would be clear that Selina had taken a train not to Greece, like she'd been ordered, but to Switzerland, where she withdrew all of the account's cash, set up a fancy new Swiss bank account, and became Holly Vanderhees. The hair, the nails, the clothes, the shoes, the bags, the jewels, the cars, the residences, the private plane. The last one was leased, of course, but all of it, the identity she'd built, purchased with Nyssa's blood money. She only wished she'd had time to grab Talia's, too. And what Selina had brought along with her? The payoff from that? Worth it. Utterly worth it.
So all of this trouble tonight, Harley said over the motorcycle's roar as they sped off into the night, was over a fake?
Selina had known it was a trap. Whether Luke Fox and his stupid apologies knew his family had been used, she had no idea, didn't care. But it was interesting that Batwing cared about the Fox family. She stored that information away to puzzle over later. Batwing himself was a problem, mostly because she liked him. He definitely filled out that suit, but she just liked him. That relentless drive to protect the innocents in this city, no matter the cost, to fight past his own demons to do so, which meant he was absolutely lethal for everything she was working toward. And though she could tell he was equally intrigued by her and could certainly use that to her advantage, "He threw down a challenge," Selena said. "We couldn't let it go unanswered." Hence why she'd had Ivy and Harley remain behind. Going in for a fake necklace hadn't been worth the risk, so they'd waited here, on the outskirts, to retrieve her. Tigress showing up had been unexpected. Oh, Nyssa and Talia must be mad, furious, and with Shrike and Tigress now dead?
"Get up, you pathetic worm."
Tigress's burning dark eyes were barely visible beneath her hood.
"Do you think our enemies give us breaks to catch our breath?"
Always words like "our" and "us" were used here at the compound. Despite the brutality, the competition, there was an us versus them mentality to the very way the instructors spoke, all designed to include, indoctrinate, we, us, ours. Lying on the mats of the training center, barely able to breathe around the stitch in her side, Selena focused, tried to calm her raging heart and get up.
"Too slow,"
Tigress hissed and launched herself upon Selena. She had enough time to raise her arms, to bring up her knees, enough time to roll up and out of Tigress's path, but not enough to avoid the sweeping kick that knocked her down again. The blow to the throat that truly ripped the air out of her lungs, then the blow to her stomach that knocked her down for good, curling around herself.
"Pathetic."
Tigress had laughed at her then, laughed and walked away. Selena had hated her ever since, hated her more when she'd seen some of the other acolytes not be able to walk away or breathe permanently. Nyssa and Talia had never punished Tigress for it, for killing acolytes during training. Nyssa had only declared it natural selection. Talia had just stroked Tigress's dark hair. Selena had imagined ripping out Tigress's throat more times than she could count. Tonight, she'd known that Tigress would savor killing her. Luckily, Tigress's confidence had been her downfall. She hadn't been prepared for Selena's show of skill, for Selena to want to win, and it had made the assassin furious to realize she had to go on the defensive, to realize that Selena had been sneaking in extra training at the League, had been studying Tigress herself during every encounter. Yet when Selena had slammed her into those steps, accidentally breaking her spine, that dark, shredded part of Selena had savored it too. That blow, the repayment, for all of them. Selena did not mourn her. She'd uttered that prayer because she didn't know why. Perhaps out of some fool's idea that if she herself had fallen, she'd want someone to do the same for her, to at least mark that she'd existed, that Selena Kyle had existed. But Selena didn't want to think on it, think too long on the pieces inside her that were so blood-splattered.
"We should have ended him when we had the chance," Harley spat. "Made it look like he and whoever that was killed each other."
A pause.
"Who was that woman?"
"A crony of some boss," Selena half lied.
Tigress did answer to Nyssa and Talia. Ivy called over her bike's engine.
"Definitely should have killed him then."
Selena didn't answer. It had been hard enough to keep the two of them at bay, keep them from seizing their chance to bring down Batwing. They didn't understand that if the League was closing in, they needed a hero. She needed him, to keep the League away for as long as possible. Limited time. She was on limited time. She knew how Nyssa and Talia hunted their own. She'd helped them do it in the past. First the Vanguard, Shrike. Then the Test of Abilities, Tigress. And the next step? There was not much time left before the next step, and she would need an army to face it. Selena looked up at the stars, barely visible with the glow from the distant city lights. Armies required money and a healthy dose of fear.
Remind me why we're sitting up on this rooftop in the cold?
Ivy's breath curled from her mouth as she sat beside Selena and studied the alley below. Summer was finally yielding to autumn's chill, a small mercy to at last say farewell to the heavy heat.
Because I need you to cover me while I have a little chat with some lowlifes in a few minutes.
Ivy only yawned, rearranging her colorful assortment of shimmering flowers on the roof tiles before them. Her little vine friend was tucked into the warmth of her pocket.
Plants don't like cold.
Well, you're still technically a human, so it doesn't apply.
Some days, Ivy admitted, I don't feel like it.
Ivy had no idea how much Selena agreed with that sentiment, but mentioning it opened the door to too many questions. So Selena picked up the newspaper she'd brought with her, telling Ivy when she'd asked that it was for the wait. She'd already done the crossword puzzle, Ivy leaning over frequently to interrupt or snatch Selena's pen to fill in an answer. Selena snapped the paper, flipping through the international headlines. An inquiring meow sounded across the roof, and Ivy made a small sound of delight. Lowering the paper, Selena smiled at the little gray cat who padded over to them.
Stalker, she told the cat as she brushed against Selena's shins, wending through her legs.
Ivy leaned over, stroking the cat's back.
Do you know that free-ranging domesticated cats are responsible for the death of billions of birds and mammals each year? Our little fur baby here is a stone-cold hunter.
Selena smiled, scratching the cat's whiskery chin.
I'm shaking in my boots.
Ivy frowned down at the cat.
So are the birds.
The cat blinked up at Ivy, as if scowling herself, and scuttled off into the dark. Selena snickered, picking up the paper again and flapping through it. Ivy smirked.
You pretend to be serious and broody, but beneath that mask, I know you're smiling all the time.
Selena waved her off, snapping the sagging paper upright. She paused at the science section, sighing as boredom set in, and tapped the article on the front page.
You think this stuff is all just hocus pocus?
Ivy leaned over, skimming the article.
Ley lines?
Selena shrugged, glancing to the alley below. All clear.
Naturally occurring pathways of energy that run across the earth like highways. Sounds fake to me.
Ivy hauled the paper toward herself.
Oh, they're real, all right. They've done tests on them. Some of the energy is so strong that if you find a ley line on a hill and put your car in neutral, it can move the car uphill for you.
That's gotta be a hoax.
Ivy frowned at her over the paper.
This is the science section. They don't publish hocus pocus, as you called it.
Ivy paused for a moment, as if weighing some internal debate. Selena held still as she did. At last, Ivy nodded, more to herself than anything, and said,
There's a ley line outside Gotham.
Selena scanned the rest of the page.
That's not in the article.
That's because no one knows it's there. I mean, those of us in the science community do, but we don't blab to the press. I'm sure some evil corporation is probably going to find a way to destroy the ley lines.
Probably.
Selena neatly folded the paper and set it aside.
Wanna take a drive out there? See the car trick in motion?
Ivy considered, then jerked her chin to the alley below.
What about them, though?
Selena snorted as two figures entered the alley at last.
This won't take long.
She launched herself over the brick wall of the roof, down the drainpipe, and right into the path of the two mid-level cronies of Carmine Falcone. By the time Ivy's toxins slithered over the roof edge, knocking the men out cold, Selena was grinning. It would only be a matter of time before the two of them reported to their boss what she'd deigned to warn them. The League was coming to steal what Catwoman was selling to Gotham City's underworld, and that the League would raise the city to the ground before they left. They had no interest in alliances, in money.
because what Selena was selling, it was that valuable. And to get it back, to avoid it falling into the wrong hands, the League would make sure that every lowlife and criminal in Gotham City was swept away in the bloodbath that would soon be unleashed on the city. If the underworld did not prepare, if they did not ready to strike back, if they were content to continue being grunts and worms, Gotham City would fall, but not to these foreign interlopers. It would fall to her.
"I'm assuming this car is stolen." Ivy frowned at the Range Rover's black leather interior. She perched on the leather as though she couldn't stand to have it touch her skin.
"It is," Selena said mildly. She'd swapped out her helmet for an onyx domino mask that revealed the bottom portion of her face, her hair hidden beneath the hood of a heavy black sweatshirt. Ivy, surprisingly, had said nothing when Selena emerged, car in tow, with her helmet stashed in the back seat. It seemed that silence was about to end, however.
"Do you know what sort of evil the leather industry does on a daily basis? The slaughter?"
"Hence you being vegan," Selena said. Ivy watched the city passing in a blur.
"You're not going to laugh about it?"
"It's your life. Your choices about food don't impact mine." Ivy studied her.
"You really need the mask?"
Selena snorted. "Little steps." Ivy shrugged, monitoring the dark road ahead. The ley line was 40 minutes to the west of the city, most of that drive down a single-lane road with no trees or anything to surround it, only a flat, barren plain.
"This used to be a forest."
Ivy motioned to the hints of grass the headlights revealed.
"It was cut down in the early 1900s to fuel the expansion of Gotham."
"Never grew back?"
"Obviously not."
Selena frowned. "The city should have planted new trees."
"Back then, no one gave a shit. Still don't."
Selena considered. "What would it cost to replant the forest here?"
"A lot. And it'd take a long time for anything to grow."
There was enough sorrow in her voice, enough resignation, that Selena said,
"Well, maybe some of our profits, maybe it can go to that."
More green spaces were never a bad thing, not at all. Ivy studied her for a long minute, and Selena kept her attention on the road, monitoring for any deer or wildlife trying to cross as she gave her space to reply. Ivy said a bit softly,
"I've never had many friends."
Selena was grateful for the road to distract her.
"And even though it's risky, this little trio of ours?"
Ivy's voice remained soft.
"It's more fun than I've had in ages."
She swallowed.
"I went through school so fast I never got the chance to, you know, be normal, go to parties or hang out with kids my age."
"I could be 45 for all you know." Selena often felt like she was. She certainly hadn't done anything society liked to call normal while growing up. But she'd tried to give it to Maggie, as best she could. Making Maggie happy had made up for the lack of having a typical teenage experience. Mostly.
"You're not 45, Ivy said, snickering. "What I can see of you certainly doesn't look like it. And you don't talk like you are anyway."
Selena laughed a little. "Harley complains about my fancy talking."
"Harley is just being Harley."
Selena asked carefully, "What's up with you two? Your history?" She'd been dying to know for weeks now. Even in the darkness of the car's interior, Selena could have sworn she saw a blush spread on Ivy's face.
"We hook up? Harley was one of the first people I met after all the school stuff was done, and I started doing this. The Poison Ivy gig, I mean. And I fell hard."
"And Harley?" A shrug.
"I'm a distraction for Harley, I think, from the things that haunt her."
Ivy held up her hands, vines pulling away to reveal bare flesh.
"It's hard to be together when one of you is literally toxic."
"I thought you could control your toxins,"
Selena said, still mesmerized, despite the horrors of Ivy's past, by what she'd become. Ivy let the vines cover her hands again.
I can. But sometimes, if I lose control, it's a risk. Skin-to-skin contact.
It had to be lonely as hell to be that way, to worry like that. Perhaps it was one of the most unforgivable things those scientists had done to her.
Ivy waved away her own words. It didn't matter anyway. Harley has never wanted to put a label on us. After the Joker, she said she wanted to be free, but I don't know if it's truly because she doesn't want to be tied down or because she worries that the Joker will take vengeance on anyone who dates her.
Noble. I thought he's her ex, though.
He is, but I'm not sure if Harley is even entirely over him. The Joker speaks to some broken part of her, a part I can't reach.
Ivy's eyes flickered. A good friend. Ivy was truly a good friend. Harley deserves better than someone like the Joker. Someone like you, Selena added silently. Ivy drummed her fingers on the arm of her seat, the vines along her hands shifting a bit with the motion.
He's a monster. He's worse than a monster. I don't know if you ever met him, but he's...
Ivy rubbed her face. I've heard enough to know how awful he is. Cold licked down her spine at the thought of it.
Evil. He is evil,
Ivy insisted.
And Harley wants to be with him?
The question slipped out before Selena could stop it. After working with Harley and Ivy these past few weeks, it still baffled her. Ivy was smart, funny, and warm. Yes, her history was pained. Yes, she was a criminal, and definitely a bit of a fanatic, yes, but Selena didn't understand it. Why Harley would choose to run to the Joker, especially when she could have Ivy.
I've wanted to ask Harley that every day for the past year,
Ivy said hoarsely. Why don't you? It wasn't her business, Selena reminded herself, even as she tried to convince herself that she was asking only to better know her allies.
Because if I confront Harley about him, it will only drive her away, and I'd rather be at her side and keep an eye on her than be shut out of her life completely.
Ivy's laugh was low, sad.
It's pathetic, I know.
No, it's not, Selena said, and meant it. For the person you love, you find yourself making choices like that, living in gray areas. It's not pathetic at all. God knows she'd done plenty of that, gladly, still would. Ivy stared out the window.
I'm not sure if Harley even knows that I still feel this way, still want more with her, more for us. She's better at hiding that sort of stuff than you realize.
Selena refrained from saying that Harley hadn't given any sort of sign about returning Ivy's intentions. She wasn't that cruel.
Ivy blurted, please don't say anything to her. I won't.
Selena studied Ivy for as long as she dared to take her eyes off the road. She admitted quietly,
I've never had any friends either.
Doing this sort of thing? She waved a hand to the car, their little joyride to the ley line. Never done it before.
Why?
Selena debated lying, wanted to lie. But she said,
because I had something important that I needed to take care of, and it required all my time, my energy to do it. Friends were a luxury I couldn't afford.
Ivy's throat bobbed.
And what happened to that something you had to take care of?
Selena steered the car into the dark. I made a sacrifice, and then I didn't need to take care of it anymore. Ivy told Selena where to stop, pointing out an abandoned factory that loomed like an iceberg in the sea of blackness before them. A dusty service road led off the paved street to the warehouse, dirt crunching under the Range Rover's wheels as they approached.
Did you bring me here to murder me? Selena asked as she put the car in park.
Ivy laughed.
If I'd wanted to do that, wouldn't it have happened by now?
She threw open the door, stepping into the night, and Selena followed suit. The night was brisk, the stars clearer above them, calm and quiet and safe. Ivy gulped down a breath of air.
I'd forgotten what fresh air tastes like.
Me too,
Selena murmured. In the silence, they stared up at the glittering bowl of the sky. Movement caught her eye, and Selena glanced to Ivy in time to see her tip.